Hi, I'm Laura Calugar, Senior Editor with Multi-Housing News, and you're listening to Mission Success, Women in Multifamily, the monthly podcast series dedicated to powerful female leaders in the multifamily industry. For this last episode in 2023, I've invited a capital improvement specialist with a broad history in the business. Stephanie Johnston is a division president with RPM Living, overseeing the company's property operations across the Midwest, Southeast, Mid-Atlantic, and the Northeast regions, plus its affordable portfolio. Together, we'll dive into the fascinating world of apartment renovations and remodeling. Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Of course.
First, for those who don't know you, please tell me a bit about your professional path. How did you end up in multifamily?
I started in the business, I think, like a lot of people do. I kind of fell into it when I was in college just because I needed a job. so I started in student housing. And honestly, I don't know if they still do it, but back then you got free rent if you worked at a student housing community. So I started that when I was in college, really just because I needed something to do for work. And then I never left. So I worked in student housing for about 7 years and then hopped over to the conventional space. I worked in asset management for about 2.5 years, then came back to conventional and just kind of grew my path from there.
Mm-hmm. And what did you enjoy most about student housing and how does it compare to working in conventional?
You know, it's funny. People look at student housing as if it's, you know, chaotic and crazy. And, you know, people who've never worked in it say, oh my gosh, I could never do student housing. I miss it every day. it was so much fun. It's definitely chaotic and crazy. But it's just a whole different world. You know, a lot of the people who work in student housing are younger. They're still in college. So it's just a really fun, lively environment. And working with college students as your residents it's a lot of fun. It's very, very different from conventional housing, just in, you know, the lease terms, and everyone moves in at the same time and moves out at the same time. So,
right.
You know, quote unquote, turn, the 2 weeks of absolute madness in the middle of the summer that's one piece I do not miss at all. but it was a great way to get myself into this career for sure.
And today, what's the hardest thing for you as a multifamily property manager operator?
I think the hardest thing in today's world is just managing assets in a cash tight environment. You know, the market has shifted drastically over the last 2 years, really. And, you know, with interest rates rising and everyone being much more sensitive to how money is being spent, it's a very different environment to manage in. Not that we just had blank checks from our clients 3 years ago, but, you know, everyone's counting pennies across the board at this point. So just trying to get creative with how we're using the money that we have and prioritizing one thing over the other. It truly is a completely different world to manage in than it was just a few years ago.
Yeah, but all these problems haven't stopped RPM Living from increasing its portfolio while also implementing value-add renovations and repositioning of properties. What is your approach to value-add investments?
You know, RPM has never really taken a one size fits all approach to value add, both to unit renovations and to, you know, larger exterior and interior capital. It really comes down to the priorities of the client, the budget and the individual property needs. So, you know, we're really trying to focus on what's going to get us the most bang for our buck, as opposed to just taking a cookie cutter approach across the board. You know, one community's value add on a unit renovation is going to be super successful. And if you mimic that on another in a different location, you might not warrant the same kind of premium. Right. So really just doing a lot of market research, understanding where the demand is and trying to focus our efforts there.
And today, what are the most in-demand in-unit improvements? What do residents want in their apartments?
You know, smart home technology is still at the top of the list. And, you know, it's been around for a few years and a lot of new developments and value-add product is kind of offering it up, but it's still not, you know, 100% across the board. So when we're evaluating value-add opportunities, smart home technology is still very much at the forefront. So you know, smart thermostats, smart locks, Ring doorbells, things of that nature. It's also still, even though a lot of people post-COVID are very much back in the office, I think that a lot of our residents got used to working from home for an extended period of time. So there's mm-hmm. still a very high demand for office space within their home. So, you know, separate alcoves, nooks, a dedicated office or kind of a flex space that they can utilize to work from home. Residents still very much want that.
Mm-hmm. And is it difficult to modify the layouts or the apartments to provide this to your residents?
In some cases, yes. I mean, if you're working with limited space, you can only do what you can do.
Right.
A lot of it is about staging and how we market things. So, you know, if we are in a market where this office space is heavily sought after, we might market a two bedroom as a one bedroom with an office instead of a two bedroom, mm-hmm. just to kind of spark that in our prospect pool of saying, oh, I do have an office space here. This is great. Or I could utilize it for this. And again, you know, even just staging a model to show, and it doesn't even have to be a dedicated space. I mean, I'm sitting in my home talking to you right now, and I just have a desk in the like a little tucked away corner of my living room.
Yeah, likewise.
So, exactly. So, you know, it doesn't have to be its own separate room. I think just visualizing, helping the residents or the prospects rather visualize the space and show what could be goes a long way.
Right. Moving to amenities, and when selecting amenities to upgrade, combining new offerings with a tried and true can be a successful strategy. Just tell us more about how amenity spaces are upgraded today. To what extent do these improvements take into consideration resident feedback?
Yeah, so in a lot of cases, if we're considering, in most cases, if we're considering amenity upgrades, the initial review kind of starts with market research. Understanding what our comps are offering and kind of where we may be lacking. Mm-hmm. You know, if every single one of our competitors has, you know, a yoga studio, maybe we should consider adding one, you know, if they're getting a lot of traction with that from their resident pool or their prospect base. But we absolutely take into account resident feedback. So in a lot of cases, if we have a space that could be utilized for a multitude of different things, and we're kind of trying to nail down, okay, what do we need to do with this space? Or this is underutilized, and we want to make it into something else. We'll survey the residents to get a better understanding of what they would most likely use. Because as much as the market research helps us, ultimately, you know, we're trying to cater to the residents that we have in place and the ones that are coming after them.
And what happens when an amenity, for example, a gym facility or a cinema, isn't really used by residents? What happens to that space?
You know, it's funny you ask about a cinema. I feel like movie theaters are the biggest offender for this. You know, they look great on prospect tours. And I experienced this. It's less in the conventional space. When I was on the student side, every single property we had a movie theater and no one used them. But when you gave a prospect a tour, they were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I love it. So they look great, but ultimately if the residents aren't going to use them, you know, it's not really giving us what we need. In some cases, it's just because the residents don't have a good understanding of how they would use them, or they just kind of forget that they're there. So I would say before we make any kind of large change, first, we would try to encourage the residents to use it through resident events or promoting the space and kind of just sending out reminders, hey, this is here. This is how we recommend mm-hmm. you use this space. Because you know, to the point I made earlier, we're in a cash tight environment. So if we can utilize the space we already have, then obviously we want to focus on that. But ultimately, if the space is something that residents don't see value in, the owner has the funds to update the space, then we will change it. And again, we would kind of go through the process of requesting feedback from the residents. Hey, you know, you guys aren't using this space. What do you want to see here instead?
And also one thing that has been gaining popularity is outdoor amenity space, and they're quickly evolving and they're reflecting both newer and longstanding recreational habits. How can operators maximize underutilized yard space? What kind of outdoor amenity improvements are most appreciated by residents today?
Yeah, again, not a one size fits all for the approach to outdoor amenities, but our residents love being outside. That kind of goes across the board. And I think that really started during COVID when people were just cooped up and they were like, any opportunity I have to get out of my house, I'm going there. And it really just stuck. So the good thing about outdoor space is that you can transform it pretty easily, and for not a lot of money, if you just want something to put in front of your residents. So, I mean, you throw seating into a vacant outdoor space, and there is an additional amenity. You know, put a fire pit in, you throw a couple hammocks out there, and you've got a hammock garden. You know, we're seeing a lot of people put outdoor games, cornhole, those large like tic-tac-toe boards and things like that, in vacant outdoor spaces, which anything that's going to give it some use. Hey, there is a purpose to this space now, instead of, oh, we just, you know, we threw a bench over here, you can sit on it. Additionally, I mean, you know, residents love their dogs. Nothing has changed there. And I feel like we're just seeing more and more pets flood our properties, which is amazing. I love dogs.
We all do.
Exactly. So anything that's focused on dogs is going to be an immediate win. So, you know, a pet park, even just a walking trail, which can be utilized for, you know, resident fitness or walking their dog.
But, a pet spa.
You know, a pet spa, yes. You know, I love a good pet spa, but they are not without cost. You know, they're one of the more expensive, really an indoor outdoor amenity that you can put in. Residents definitely use them. If you're looking for something that's easy, quick, relatively inexpensive, I would say give very intentional or functional seating in a space, that's kind of focused on something in the center, you know, a fire pit or games or something to that degree. You know, the larger amenities, sports courts and things like that. It really depends on the market. In some cases, you know, they get a ton of use, and in some cases they really just sit there. So I would say in that case, if you're looking for something on the larger scale, do your research, make sure that it's something that that you really think your resident base is actually going to use before you pour the money into it.
Are these exterior and branding upgrades as important as in-unit improvements, particularly in highly competitive markets?
I would say yes is kind of the short answer. You know, it's all about the first impression that you're making on your prospects. And if the inside of the units looks beautiful and it's upgraded and amazing, but the exterior isn't inviting or it doesn't match the interior aesthetic, there's going to be a disconnect with your prospect pool. So I wouldn't say you need to tackle absolutely everything on the exterior and make it, you know, perfectly match what you've done inside, but fresh paint. You know, if you're doing a rebrand, new kind of modern signage, it really goes a long way to just kind of catch the eye and give the impression of, oh, this is new-ish, at least, you know, things have been done here.
And prospects can see that you care about how your brand is visible out there. So that's also important.
Exactly.
Yeah, but despite the allure that a full property facelift presents, these projects are not without struggles, as you said at the beginning of our conversation. Is it difficult to plan for such improvements in today's economic environment? How can these renovations be financed?
It is definitely challenging, for sure. As you know, as we've discussed, the financial position of a lot of these communities has changed over the last couple of years. So you know, even if a client bought a property and had the full expectation of touching every surface and really renovating everything, things might have changed. You know, their business plan might have changed since the market shifted. So I mean, my recommendation would just be to do things in phases. Not every upgrade needs to be completed all at the same time. You know, I truly believe that we should focus on the items that we're getting the most feedback on first. So, you know, if you're getting prospect and or resident feedback that, hey, the exterior just looks rough, the paint is chipping, you know, it just doesn't look like you're taking care of the property, put your attention and your funds first into painting the exterior and kind of sprucing that up before you move on to any amenity spaces or additional upgrades. For what that's worth, you know, making mood boards and kind of getting residents and prospects excited with, like, you know, renovations coming soon. That goes a long way. It really works wonders to get people excited about it. Even if you don't have something to put in front of them right now, telling them what the plan is and a rough idea of when they can expect to see these upgrades, it really gets people excited.
Also, labor and material shortages can hamper value add projects, but sometimes when you hire local contractors, it can save you money and time. What is your approach? How often do you collaborate with local contractors?
So, like I said, we don't have kind of the one size fits all approach to renovations. It's really about the individual property needs. We have, you know, extensive relationships with national partners, but we also have local relationships and partnerships in almost every market that we operate in. So it's really just about finding the right balance of who is going to be able to do this project for the best price with the most timely delivery. And we work with anyone and everyone that we are able to in the environment today. Luckily, you know, our reach, as you noted earlier, we've grown quite a bit. So that growth has allowed us the opportunity to create some really phenomenal vendor partnerships nationally, many of whom just have, you know, local branches. So even though it's a national partnership, we truly are working with kind of the boots on the ground in these larger markets. But national, local, you know, we have partnerships across the board.
That's great. Stephanie, we're nearing the end of our conversation, so I'd like us to pivot a bit toward a different aspect of your job. You have more than 15 years of experience in the industry. What has been most exciting so far about working in multifamily, apart from the student housing period? What about the most challenging thing?
My favorite thing about this business and what keeps me coming back to it every single day is the people. You know, multifamily management is such a fun industry to work in. And the people that I work with now are some of the absolute best humans I've ever known. You know, I made a comment earlier that I went to the asset management side for a couple of years, and ultimately I came back to property management because of the people. You know, asset management is a numbers game and property management is a people game, and my heart and soul are in it with the people here. And again, that's what keeps me here. That's what drives me, is building my team and seeing them grow and seeing them succeed. It truly is the biggest blessing of my job every day. The most challenging thing, we touched on this
from the financing part. Yeah.
I think the labor and material shortages have probably been one of the most challenging things to navigate over the last few years. And, you know, we've touched on it a little bit in value add, but it's especially challenging with new construction. Our portfolio spans every type of asset you can imagine, from, you know, the very distressed value add properties up to brand new, new construction delivery. With new construction and the labor and material shortages, it's really tough. We're in a position when we are in a position where we are reliant on other people to deliver the product for us to sell. You know, it's one thing when you're in a value add situation where you can just say, okay, well, we still have the product. It's, you know, it's the renovations are a little delayed, but we still have the apartment. We can still rent it. It just hasn't been renovated yet. But when you're in a new construction environment where you're pre-leasing units and really trying to get people excited and get them in the door, in many cases before they even have anything to look at, and then there are delivery delays because of these labor and material shortages, it's very, very challenging to keep people excited and to continue, trying to drive the buzz and the excitement about a new product.
You mentioned the fact that you love the people you work with. And I wanted to ask you a question that I typically ask all my guests. How has the multifamily industry evolved from a diversity standpoint? Have you noticed improvements when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Absolutely, yes. And I think the biggest difference is that we are making an effort to recognize the differences now. You know, I don't know that there's ever been any lack of inclusion, at least not in recent years, not intentionally anyways. But I think that, you know, as things evolve in this business and in the world, frankly, you know, companies, and ours is very much one of them, are putting a focus on this instead of just having it be something that kind of sits to the side. There is a very heavy focus on diversity and inclusion of our associates. And, you know, I think really simple things like allowing associates to include their pronouns in their email signatures, it goes a really long way in making people feel seen and accepted. So it's those little things. And, you know, we have, internally, we have a diversity and inclusion council at RPM, which is made up of, you know, I want to say it's about 20 people, within our organization at every level, from onsite all the way up to, you know, senior members of our corporate team, who are really driving things on the diversity side to make sure that our associates feel heard and included on a daily basis.
Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Of course. This was great. It was so nice to meet you.
Thank you all for listening and for being a loyal fan of this podcast series. In 2024, I plan to introduce you to more extraordinary women in the multifamily industry, celebrating both their professional achievements and the unique qualities they bring to the table. Until our next audio meeting next year, make sure you check out multihousingnews.com regularly for the latest news, feature stories, and podcasts. Enjoy the winter holiday season.